What up, guys? It's your boy, Tiny Sumo, coming in with another episode of Tiny Sumo Talk Time. Real quick, let me get my plugs out of the way. Go to dirtyclinics.com, check out the product there. You can find them on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and YouTube. You just have to search dirtyclinics, and you can find their podcast, DCE Pirate Radio Podcast, on iTunes. Sweet. Now, plugs are out of the way. I've got that down nice and smooth now. Today's guest is coming all the way from South Australia. He's probably actually the closest guest I've had on the podcast now, which is cool. He's my old judo coach, so I know him well. Anyway, he is South Australia's first combat sports Olympian representing in judo. He's also going to come games, multiple world champs. He's now transitioned to MMA, and he's doing a little bit of sneaky jiu-jitsu on the side. Steve Brown, thanks for coming on today, dude.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right, real quick, for those that don't know you, quick rundown. Tell me who you are. Tell me what you're about. Why would people know of you?
You just did a pretty good job of it, but yeah, probably best known for judo. So spent most of my life with the judo, head coach at SA Judo Academy, South Australian state coach, as a competitor, was it did an Olympic Games, did a Commonwealth Games, as you said, a few world champs. And then you pretty much nailed it. More recently, kind of focusing on the MMA side of things, just trying, I guess, open my skill set a bit more and, yeah.
Cool. Awesome. All right. So the questions, I put it out to the general public. I posted up on Instagram, Snapchat, all that sort of good stuff. You can find me, Tiny Sumo, on all of those platforms. But I put the question out there and asked people, what do you want to know? I've got an Olympian on. What questions have you got? The first question, one of the ones I got probably more regularly was, how did you get started? And what was the process like to get to the Olympics? That's what people want to know.
Yeah, sure. So I guess I got started as a young kid. I was about 6 years old. It was a club at my school. It was big. The majority of the kids at the school were doing it. We probably had, 80 or 100 of the kids in the school were doing it. So it wasn't really an uncommon thing. It was no different to probably playing football or anything else at the time. Like most kids, it's not super serious. But I think to most combat sports are so precise in their technique that you have to start young. So if you don't start young, things are difficult. There's some sports out there where that may be a bit more close skilled sports, and they can probably get away with starting a bit older and using their, I guess, their natural athleticism. But in combat sports, generally speaking, they tend to start young. And then the process from there, I probably started taking it a bit more seriously at probably 12 years old, started training every day and then moving on to twice a day. And then by the time I was a teenager, I was pretty heavily submersed, and then I started representing Australia probably as a late teen, started traveling the world with that, went to the 2008 Olympic Games. Just kind of spent like the next 10 years on the international circuit, getting a pretty good life, training, fighting people.
Nice.
It's a good way to be.
I like it. So how the Olympic trial process, what's that like? Because you see it's probably different in other countries. I'd imagine it's different, obviously, like communist countries and stuff like that as well. But what's it like getting onto the Australian team? And from there, is it then a separate process to make an Olympic team?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a few stages. First of all, you've got to be successful at a national level. So, or first of all, successful at a state level, and then you can be successful at a national level. And then, but being a part of an Australian team, you're still a fair way off being a part of an Olympic team. So the Australian team at any time might have 50 or 60 people in it who are a range of different weight categories, a range of different ages, from teenagers through to adults. And then the Olympic team, in judo, there's a fallacy that Australia has to send somebody in each division. We don't. So in some swimming events, we even send two people per division. In judo, there's 32 men per weight division in the whole world. Obviously when there's only 32 per weight division, there's a lot of countries that don't have anybody in there. So that selection criteria, the basic gist of it is you've got to get yourself into the top 22 in the world. Okay. The final 10 positions are a bunch of, political things that happen, like wild cards and those sorts of things. And to get yourself into that top 22, it's a series of world ranking events, things like that. And then I guess Yeah, and then the other thing which makes judo a bit unique, and you mentioned the communist countries, is out of that top 22 in the world, no country can have a multiple number of athletes in one weight division. So, for example, in the London Olympics, the number one and number two in the world in my weight division were both Russian. One of them missed out. It was just how it was.
Yeah, okay. So there's, if you're looking, obviously, like you said, you have to win certain comps to get in.
Yeah.
If you're looking at like an Australian level, what comps were you needing to perform well at in order to, you know, like your nationals and stuff like that?
Yeah, I guess to begin with, your focus changes the whole time. But to begin with, you know, as a teenager, your aims are to try to win the. We've got a national circuit here, so we have national titles, and then we have a bunch of other national level comps that are a part of a circuit. So your aim is to perform well in those ones. But really, when you eventually, if you're lucky enough to get to set your eyes on something like an Olympics, the national comps, they matter, because if you don't do well in them, you don't get a shot at the next ones. But really, you need to be performing at an international level.
Okay, so that then comes down to, like, is Oceania's an international level, so stuff like that.
Yeah.
So basically from that level up.
Yeah, and we've got, there's different tiers, and it's something the International Federation actually does quite well. There's different tiers. So obviously national level, then continental level, and then we have a series of World Cups, and then event. So basically A level, B level, C level. So your A level is your World Championships and your Olympic Games. Then your B level might go to, I think it's World Cups, and they change it around. But yeah, and you get a certain amount of points depending on what your result is in each of them.
Yeah, gotcha. Obviously, competing in the Olympics, pinnacle of the sport. Now, for anyone that I talk to, anyone that runs in my little combat sport circle, as far as we're concerned, like that's it. Can you tell us a bit more about your Olympic experience? How was it for you?
Yeah, I think, I grew up being, I guess, with that same mentality that the Olympics is the pinnacle. So, it's a bit strange, I think, sometimes when you hang around people who don't think like that, because when you spend your life growing up with that, other people think that who cares, it's a game of sport, which is, that's fair enough. But when you spend your life thinking that, it's like, and most of my circles think the same way. So it certainly is in our sport. It's the pinnacle of our sport. I consider it to be like the modern day battlefield. It's where countries go to, it's the modern day where countries go out and just go to battle now and find out who's going to be supreme. I like all that side of it. I like the history of it. I like, I think that's all cool. But, I don't really know where we're going with that, but yeah.
No, obviously, like we said, we both sort of view it at the same level.
Yeah.
For me, for someone who hasn't obviously gone, I'd like to, and it's the same as people. Like I said, people have been reaching out. They want to know what it was like for you, what did you take away from the experience?
I remember one thing. I was quite young when I went, and I think there's a lot of luck involved in sport and a lot of timing and things like that. So I was relatively young. I was only 22, and I knew that at the time. I was really conscious of it. A lot of people said to me, you're so young, you won't appreciate all the rest of it. And I made a point out of making sure that I appreciated it. And it's perhaps if I had gone 6 or 8 years later, I might have even more so. But I made a point of making sure that every single day there was amazing. So I made sure that, I think it's important that when you're, like, sport has so many lows, especially combat sport. There's so many dark moments where you're on your own and you're losing. And when you're in the change rooms after you've lost, it's a pretty lonely place. So it's important that you suck in those highs. Sometimes combat sport athletes tend to, be a bit too tough to enjoy the highs. But I made sure that I got right involved, did the opening ceremony thing. And as a combat sport athlete, it's not too often you get to walk out in front of 110,000 people. That's cool. And then fighting, obviously the fighting part of it's insane. Fighting in front of, I think we had like 22,000 people there. Sometimes I think Australians don't understand that, because we get used to hearing 100,000 at the football.
Open air, big open space.
Exactly. Yeah, big open space. There's 36 guys on the field.
Yeah.
Most of the time you're just down the back somewhere. When you're in a combat arena and there is just the two of you out there, and it's a size of a basketball hall, so it's quite small. So those sorts of things are pretty cool, and they're things that stick with you. And then outside of that, just the whole experience, the Olympic Village, everyone always, that's probably the most common thing to this day. Everyone always asks me about what's the Olympic Village like. And it's, it's every bit that you'd imagine. It's like for a sports person, it's like being in Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
Yeah, okay.
So it's you know, the 24-hour food halls, and everywhere you look, there's a celebrity. There's Roger Federer over there. There's, you know, Ian Thorpe over here. There's, you know, just even people who are not even Olympians are there. It's just like, I remember like, what's the guy's name? I really like him. The dude, Vince Vaughn was there. Like, yeah, we went out
past. That's random. Yeah, that's really random. Yeah.
And some other people, like that, like the Prince of Denmark, the one that's married to the Australian guy, like, yeah, he was there. Like, everywhere you look, there's famous people. And yeah, probably the cool thing about the Olympics is there's lots of people there who just are just normal people. So it's cool to go out and just be like, hey, no, I'm having McDonald's with the dream team. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It is cool. I can understand why that would be a very cool experience. And like you said, I mean, you look at it as the pinnacle of the sport, and you can appreciate the fact that if those people are there to compete, yeah, regardless of what, I mean, like, that's the thing too. I think when I look at it, regardless of the sport, obviously I'm a combat sport guy.
Yeah.
But if I can look at it at any sport and be like, well, if they tell me it's an Olympic sport, and if you're the guy that's doing it or the girl that's doing it, you're the best.
That's right. And that's something I've always liked about it. Like, I think it's pretty cool. When you get to watch something and just be like, holy moly, this person's the best in the world at this. Mm. And it's something surreal as well. And something, growing up being obsessed with the Olympics, it was something surreal watching somebody win an Olympic gold medal in real life.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter what sport it was. I personally am a combat guy as well. So the individual sports in particular tend to be, especially for me, the individual sports where you can only win one medal.
Yeah.
To me, they hold something a bit more special. Yeah. So I remember watching, actually he's gone on to become famous now, Henry Cejudo. I remember watching him win his Olympic gold medal. And at the time, I didn't know who he was. He's just an American 60 kilo guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was insane. And you can just see it's his whole life. And it's just, the whole crowd was just insane over it. I feel like when there's only one gold medal up for grabs, the highs and the lows, it's just the nature of combat sport, isn't it? And we see it in the UFC and everything else. When you lose, it is brutal, but when you win, the ecstasy of it is just it's a hard. I think anybody who hasn't been there and done a sport like that, where it's make or break, they don't understand those highs and lows.
I was talking about it to someone last night. Actually, they asked me like how are some of these guys so tough, or how are they so determined, or whatever, and they asked me like what I love about fighting. And the best way that I could put it into context, because I'm not very good with words, but the best way I could put it into context is that it's a physical representation of your soul.
Yeah.
So like I can see your hard work manifested physically, whether you succeed or not, I can see that you have given yourself to this one thing. And that's special. That's beautiful. I even as a spectator get to take that in. And that's special that you as an athlete give to the people watching. I get to see a little bit of you.
Yeah. I've been saying to a few people, like, I got asked something similar in an interview just recently. And I said to them as well, for me, this is the world's oldest proving ground. Over the years, we've refined it. There was probably not that so long ago where one person would have been killed. But this is like and it might be a bit dramatic, but it's modern day gladiator stuff.
Yeah.
It's two men or two women finding out who is who's the top dog, basically.
Yeah.
But also, I think people who haven't done it, that's why they struggle to understand where the respect and things like that lie in it. With the majority of combat sport athletes, they have a huge amount of respect for their opponent, irrespective of the circus that you might see on.
Yeah.
Because they understand. And they can see the majority of over the years, I've lost some big fights. Because you're going to lose some.
Yeah.
And the higher the scale you go, the higher you climb, the bigger the chances when you fall, it's going to be big, because that's just the nature of it. So, and there's always someone there ready to tell you, or ready to bask in your failure.
Yeah.
And you know, you lose like a big international final, or you lose a national gold medal, or you miss out on the Olympics or something like that. And there'll be somebody there out there who essentially suffers from tall poppy, who is just waiting to at the very least talk behind your back or give you a smile. Like, But you really can't let those people worry you, because there's a famous thing, it's Theodore Roosevelt quote or something along the lines of, you know, it's far better to dare mighty things than to be with those weak souls who know neither victory or defeat. And I really like that. I think that's and I don't feel like the majority of people who have been out there and done it would never. They might feel sorry for the person, or they might be sympathetic towards them, but I very rarely think they think, ha ha, I'm glad you got dropped on your ass.
No, I think a lot of it too, if you have competed, a lot more of it's empathy. And like, because I look at it, that's the thing too, like if I ever watch a fight and I see someone get stopped, I see, you know, like anything like that, or you just see the heartbreak at the end of the fight, you're like, no, I get
it. It's a part that hurts. It's always, we all know, fighting doesn't really hurt that much. Not generally. Training hurts.
Yeah.
Not many people, when they fought, come off and go, gee, my eye's so sore. You know, it's always just, I can't believe I lost. I can't believe I stepped right when I should have stepped left. I can't believe. And I think the hardest ones to cop are usually the ones where your loss was on you. That's usually the hardest ones to cop. When you lose because the guy's better than you in some ways, I've never been a great loser, which is probably why I've been a good competitor. just don't like losing. But at the same time, if the guy just bettered you, you know, you can, and even to some extent, if you get a bad, sometimes we get a bad call of the judge or something, you can kind of go with it, because you just go, well, that's just the way it happens. But yeah. I think sometimes when you've let yourself down, they're the ones that are hard to cop.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I can appreciate that. It's hard too, especially if you've spent, I mean, competing at the sort of level you've competed at, it's obviously different again, because I was talking to Fev about it last night, and we came to agreement. We were talking about the fact that I was talking to you today, and how the Olympics is so special in time, like as a timepiece, because I can see a lifetime of work, and everything has to be within. It has to be right. Like you were saying before, the times have to be right. Everything has to align.
It's where the Olympics is so brutal. We all know it's once every 4 years. What we don't see is in judo, for example, the Olympic qualification period is 2 years before the Olympics. Yeah. That's when it starts, and then it ends just before the Olympics. So it's starting right now for Tokyo.
Yeah.
So what you don't see is long before that person gets to that Olympic Games, there's been years and years' work, but in particular there's been 2 years. Mm-hmm. If they happen to have succumbed to an injury or something like that, or just bad form, mm-hmm. that could affect them in 2 years' time. But even if they do manage to get there, if you wake up on the day of the Olympics and you have tonsillitis, or if you've got a bad broken toe, it is just stiff shit.
Yeah.
It's there's no interchange bench. You might hear, like here in Aussie rules, oh, grand finals, they don't come along too often, or you might only play in one in your whole career. But the point is, you can play in one every year.
Yeah.
You might not, but you can.
Yeah.
That's the thing with the Olympics. And if for whatever reason you happen to qualify, like, I don't think I was at the best I ever was when I was at the Olympics.
Okay.
But that just happened to have been, like, had the Olympics been held 2 years later on a different site, then maybe I would have been better.
Yeah.
But that's, you can't, that's just the game.
That's just the game.
It is. And I'm very thankful for the opportunities I got. So I'm not bitter about it in any way. I'm happy for the things I got to do and all the rest of it. But you hear stories sometimes of some judo people, like probably a lot of other sports too, but you know, going out and remarkable performances under incredible duress. Actually, I can give you a couple of examples that aren't judo. There was the cyclist, I've just gone blank on his name, but he won a gold medal like weeks or months after his daughter died at the Olympics. He's an Australian cyclist. I've just gone blank on his name. And then there's a couple other, there was the weightlifter
died. The German weightlifter,
yep. Yeah, his wife died like weeks before the Olympics. And in physical injury wise, there was a Korean guy. Can't remember his name now. Kim Jae Boom, his name is, and he 81 kilo Korean guy, and he won his Olympic gold medal literally with a torn shoulder, like destroyed shoulder, the sort of thing, and ended up having to have a reconstruction like a day or two afterwards. And you hear similar stories quite often how this person, if they were playing any other sport, would have been having reconstructions and stuff like that, but. He's like, you know, this is an Olympic gold medal. I want to, and not only it's one thing to want to do it, it's another thing to be able to do it.
Yeah.
With such injury. Yeah. Actually, I went and I knew a guy who won a bronze medal in hockey at the Olympics, and he broke his ankle in the very first game of the hockey. And he still got presented with a hockey bronze medal because he's a part of the team.
Yeah.
And I found that a bit, in hockey, that's just what happens. But if in a combat sport or weightlifting or anything like that, you break your ankle on that first that's it. Really, it's I don't care if you're world champion. Yeah. It's just, it is what it is.
It is that funny, it's the hard one when you're looking at young, and looking from an individual sport perspective, that's, I think, that's the difference.
I don't judge him. I mean, because that's just how they do it.
I'd take it.
Yeah, yeah. But I just found it a bit, it's a team sport. I met another girl who was a relay swimmer, and she got an Olympic gold medal and didn't swim in the final. So Australia apparently entered 4 swimmers in the heat.
Oh, okay.
The logic being to keep their 4 best swimmers fresh for the final.
Wow. Okay.
So the 4 swimmers in the heat, they didn't even win it. They came like second or third or something.
Yeah.
But they qualified the team for the final, and then in the final we brought in all the big guns who won the gold medal. And all 8 swimmers got a gold medal.
Okay. I didn't know you could do that. That's crazy.
All right. I didn't know that. But anyway,
but that's,
it's all different.
I was going to say, I can't say that I know a lot about swimming. So that's probably...
No, I didn't either. I was just chatting. She's like, oh, I won a gold medal. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Cool. Like, you know, what leg did you swim? Oh, I didn't know. Okay. But anyway, I think that's one thing I do love about the combat sports, as brutal as it is.
Yeah.
As I say, you see parts of people's souls.
Yeah.
I've seen it break people. I've seen it build people. But I really think it's, it's modern day battlefields. And I think I've spoke to you before about, I'm not sure if I have, but how the Australian Institute of Sport now use elite special forces to train combat sport athletes.
Yeah, we've spoken about that.
Yeah, because they say it's a similar mentality of kill or be killed type thing. It's that elite mentality. These days, less and less often are we using guns, but more and more often countries are going toe-to-toe in this similar. And that's what they're saying. If you were the countries that tend to dominate these really hard sports are the same countries that have always dominated battle.
Yeah. Look at like Eastern Bloc stuff.
Well, they're tough. They're tough.
You can track immigration policy, immigration influx in the US through the 1900s based off who the current boxing champions were. They got there 10 years before and went, oh, how do I make money? I can punch people for money. So I'll go do that.
You know? And sometimes you hear stories too about people who maybe weren't so great in their own country. They were okay, but I've heard stories about people like farmers in Uzbekistan who can beat the snot out of the the national wrestling team. but they can't join the team because they've got to be a farmer, otherwise they're going to starve.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool though. And the whole world fights, and that also makes it cool as well. Every country in the world pretty much has their own version of wrestling or grappling or something. Yeah.
That's something I've found. I've probably been deep diving into that more recently too, like traditional grappling styles for countries. And it is interesting.
So Olympic federations commonly go into these places and say, right, the Russians were the most famous, where they went in and 1964 to all the Sambo clubs and said, right, you're not doing Sambo anymore, you're doing Judo. And Sambo kind of went underground because a lot of them kept doing it. But they do it often. They go to these local sports and they say, okay, you do some Kazakhstani sand wrestling, you're going to do wrestling now, Olympic wrestling. But it's just, it's the oldest sports in the world.
Yeah. Well, it's definitive. And I think that's the difference too. It's really easily definable. I can watch. I don't need to know a lot about it as an outsider. Like even if you're talking about the traditional wrestling stuff. I don't know the rules because I can't understand the language.
Dominate the other guy. Yeah. Dominate the other guy. Not too many sports do you win from getting dominated. So it's pretty. Oh yeah, that guy's beating up that guy. It's technicalities, but yeah.
Yeah, he wins. One of the other things that people have been asking about, they wanted to know, do you have a particular favorite match? Can you think back to obviously you've had thousands of judo matches, but would you be able to, do you think you could pick one? Or maybe one or two?
Probably the one that I'm probably most well known for was at the 2013 World Championships where I broke this guy's arm. There's a video that's gone around like a fair bit on YouTube.
I know the video.
I didn't actually fight that well in that particular fight, but There was a few cool things about it. It was the first time I've ever seen a guy stretch it off with a broken arm. So that was shit enough about these things. I wasn't fighting very well. But I guess the upside to it, apart from the fact that a cool video got around, the upside to it was that I was in a place where I probably shouldn't have won. You know, I think it was 50. I was losing. And I guess I found a way to win, and that's important. Like even the submission, and people said I got a fair bit of hate for that because people said, oh, the submission was too brutal, everything else. I saw his arm and it was coming off. Like, it's just, there's his arm. The technique wasn't the greatest technique I've ever done, but it was just a case of I want to win more than you want to win. So that was, yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. So I didn't lose any sleep over that at all, but So, yeah, I mean, that one's probably up there. I'm trying to think. Probably another one. Again, you kind of have different favorites for different reasons. But if anything, it's probably a bit of a mentality thing. But sometimes it's the bad ones are the ones that stay in your mind. But but I had another one when I was quite young, and I fought a guy I was probably only 18, and I fought a guy who was ex-French national team. And everyone told me I couldn't win, and everyone, no one gave me the time of day, and even the coaches who were there, they wouldn't spend any time with me before the fight because they basically were too busy dealing with the athletes they thought were going to win. And I've come in and just bopped this guy on his nose in the first 15 seconds. It wasn't enough to win, but it was enough to get a good score. And then all of a sudden, I've got all these people come over to the mat and they're screaming and yelling because people are quick to want to jump onto those sorts of things. Of course. But yeah, and probably the other one that really sticks in my mind is my first national championships that I won. I had a really bad experience the year before where I was just involved in some political stuff which ended the match. I didn't like it. And that built up a lot of pressure, and I had that pressure for a full probably a lot longer than a year, but I had a lot of pressure. And then the way the final worked out, the people who were involved the year before were involved in this, and so there's all this pressure building up. And And then I won the fight quite quickly in about 18 seconds, and I won it decisively to the point where that no referee can take it away. There can't be any argument about it. It's just that sense of relief, I think, when that pressure is released. They're always good things. Nice. Yeah.
That's cool. Another good answer. Last thing I want to touch on, you've stepped away from judo. You're focusing on MMA now as well. You've also got a jiu-jitsu tournament coming up. How are you feeling about
that? Yeah, so it's my first submission grappling tournament I've done. So it should be I've got to learn the rules. But it can't be too complicated, I think. The basic deal is to submit the other guy.
Yep.
So I'm going to enjoy that challenge. I'm not a big fan of the point system in jiu-jitsu. So I respect why it's there, but unfortunately in every sport, including judo, when there's a rule set, people tend to manipulate that rule set. So looking forward to fighting on your AGC. One thing that I found towards the end of my judo, and it's one of the reasons why I moved into MMA, was I wanted to fight in front of big crowds.
Yeah.
Because it's the ego, I guess, of being an athlete. But when you want to fight in those high-pressure moments, those moments where it's loud and everything's going crazy, and I got to do that quite a lot in judo, but the nature of it is you've got to keep coming home and keep fighting in school halls in front of mums and dads. And I found that really hard to be fighting in France in front of 10,000 people and then next week fighting at the local high school. Eventually I just found it harder and harder to get that motivation. So that's one thing which I'm loving about MMA, and I think hopefully this competition and this jiu-jitsu comp will be similar. It's going to be more of a spectacle. Yep. So I like it. I love the build up. I love the lights, the music, that thrill. I've actually ran two prize money judo tournaments in the past, which I didn't compete in, but I just ran them.
Yeah.
And I feel like combat athletes should get that opportunity more to compete. We on big stages.
Yeah.
We sometimes tend to. It's that hardness of it. I think we sometimes tend to want to just keep pushing them down and pegging them down one. But I feel like we should be bringing them up more. So yeah.
I've spoken about it with people in the past, and the compensation side of it's a big thing. And you get more out of people. If I as an athlete, regardless of combat sport, if I can fund myself a little bit, if I can get a little bit extra training or a little bit extra
food
or whatever it is, I mean, if that makes the difference, you're going to get better.
Yeah, and I remember, I've held these two judo comps in the past, a long time ago, 2010 and 2011. We called it Bash for Cash.
Yep.
And we had $7,000 prize money each year. So it's quite a reasonable amount of money. And one of my main driving reasons is I was working with local football clubs at the time. And there was, to be honest, like just dad bods running around getting 300 a game.
Yeah.
And I've got mates who are elite level athletes who have never fought for a dollar in their life ever.
Yeah.
So I think that's cool. I think the money's not huge. The money used to be quite good in MMA locally. The money now, not so much. Lots of people get punched in there for free.
Yeah.
But that's not, it's not about the money. It's just about a sense of worth as well. Local MMA financially won't really change my life, or won't at all. Half time it costs you more to, well, not half time, always. The amount of work you miss out to prepare for a fight is going to be less than what the check's going to be. But nonetheless, it's given them that sense of worth. And there's no bigger thrill than winning a fight in front of a big crowd, hearing a big crowd. And
Nice.
So.
All right, dude. Look, thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate it. I'm sure I know that people will have got their questions answered. I couldn't ask them all. I've got too many, but maybe we can do it again another time soon.
Cool.
Real quick plug for your stuff. You can check out Steve Jim, the SA Judo Academy, at sajudoacademy.com.au. You can find it on Facebook and Instagram under the same name. Steve will be competing at the Australian Grappling Championships.
Yep. AGC, yep.
AGC in Adelaide, so you can check him out there. And like I previously did, I'll give a quick plug. Dirtyplaneats.com. Go there now. Check out the product. You can find them on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, or YouTube. And if you want to listen to their podcast, that's on iTunes, DCE Pirate Radio Podcast. You can find my stuff, Tiny Sumo. Tiny Sumo, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, and YouTube. Also on iTunes, Tiny Sumo Talk Time Podcast. And I have a tab on dirtyplaneats.com as well. So. Sweet. Awesome, dude. Thank you again.
No worries. Thanks for having me, man.
Cheers, dude. Yeah.